Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Odd Mystery Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Links, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
My bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your king, baby, not Kevin Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. Before we start the show, I want to give a very big thank you to Ryan Graff over at XC Games for joining us last week on One-on-One. As a big fan of Senran Kagura, I was stoked to be able to chat with one of the men responsible for bringing the series to the English-speaking crowd. I know some of you listeners think I'm trolling the lot of you for praising this series, but in all honesty, it's probably one of my all-time favorites. It's Asuka and the gang from Senran Kagura, and Kiryu and the rest of the mob dudes in Yakuza that come to mind when I think of the best game series I've ever played. I know those are like on total polar opposites of one another when it comes to games, but you know, what can I say? I love these two series equally, so getting a new Senran Kagura game and a remake of the first Yakuza are what I'm really looking forward to most this summer in gaming, and I hope you are too. And in all seriousness, you gotta go and pre-order Peach Beach Splash because it is an awesome box set that you get there. And hopefully you'll be able to play against me and the Wicked Anime Crew in online mode. I will see you on the battlefield, motherfuckers. Also, special thanks to our buddy Frostbeard the Porn Master from Friday Night Fanfiction for helping out. And I'm hoping that I can find a way to get him on the normal No Borders No Race show here. It'll happen. I believe it'll happen. Trust me. Anyways, let's get this week's playlist rolling. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, Yes Asia, Amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. We're going to start things off with a track from Machiko, which served as the opening theme to Season 2 of Konosuba. God's blessing on this wonderful world. Honestly, one of the greatest comedies ever made. Not just anime comedies, comedies in general. Put it up there with Blackadder and the IT Crowd and Fawlty Towers. It is that fucking good. This song is called Tomorrow.
Don't stop. す真実を見つめる勇気に引き締めもっと君と始めよう。朝焼けがいつか夢見た未来照らしてくれてるから、手をつなぎすぐに飛び出そう。素晴らしい明日はほら僕らのためにあるから。
Machine Guns with Katale Namida from the compilation album Best Tracks, The Past and the Future. Those metalheads will be touring this summer throughout Japan, so visit sexmachines.smg-fire.com for more information. So it's been, what, 2 weeks since E3 2017 happened? And all in all, it was a great showing of games that were being presented. The Mario & Rabbids game turned out to potentially be the funniest XCOM experience ever. Battlefront 2 appears to have ironed out the plethora of mistakes of the last game. Days Gone actually looks like a great zombie post-apocalyptic title. And Terry Crews appears in Crackdown 3. Oh, and Metroid Prime is in development. The fourth one specifically, with a 3DS remake of Samus Returns due out later this year. And that's always a good thing. You can hear all my thoughts on E3 on a recent episode of another retro gaming podcast at RetroZap. Big thanks once again to our buddies David and the DCD for inviting me on that show. However, the thing I was worried about most regarding E3 2017... the clash of media and public access wound up happening. I have many accounts of my fellow press people missing appointments, unable to report on the majority of E3, and even not being able to get into the damn expo until a few hours after they had opened the doors for the day. For the Entertainment Software Association to be this unprepared for such a debacle, It's quite unprofessional. In fact, I know journalists that will probably never want to step foot in an E3 again if they keep running the show like they did this year. Which is why I have a couple suggestions that will assist the ESA into creating a much better E3 experience for all to enjoy. That includes the press, the public, and the booth operators, of course, because they're the most hard-working people there at E3. For starters, let's expand E3 from 3 days to five, splitting the time to 3 days with the media and 2 days for the public, which would be Tuesday through Saturday. Or even add an extra day for Sunday, which will give 3 days for the press and 3 days for general admission. If that's something that can't be done, then, you know, make separate lines for booths. One for the media, and one for the non-media. This way, they can rotate who gets a turn here and there, and even keep things organized for those who are there for appointments. And lastly, my final idea, which has been done a little bit here and there at E3, and it would be to expand the convention to outside of the main LA Expo Hall, into some of the more neighboring centers and the like. Hell, I wouldn't be too surprised if the ESA has enough dough to be able to, say, rent out the nearby Staples Center as an extra showcase area. Yes, that'll mean a lot of treading back and forth, but the space would be totally worth it. Plus, it'd keep E3 from getting too crowded and avoid the likes of Confunk and Conplague that ravish many of these kinds of events. So these are my ideas on how to better E3 without either taking away the opportunity for the public to check it out and to make it easier for the media to report on it without too much interference. This way, everybody wins in this situation. Now, if you have an idea to make E3 a better experience than last year's, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. And if they're great ideas, I'll read them off on a future episode. I mean, after all, gamers everywhere would want the best experience for E3, and I'm sure everyone would want to give their two cents on this sort of subject. Coming up, we've got a great up-and-coming band out of Los Angeles that goes by the name Tombstones in Their Eyes. Their latest EP, Fear, will be released on August 4th, and this is the opening track from it. It's called I Want to Fly. We'll be right back. Japanese psychedelic metal for you. That was Boris with My Neighbor Satan from their Smile album. The band is celebrating their 25th anniversary this year with a new album called Dear, due out in just a couple weeks. I personally pre-ordered the vinyl version, but whatever format you might be interested in getting is entirely up to you. You know, folks, as a game journalist, you do your best to cover everything that's been given to you for review equally and fairly. As you know, I like to write as much as I can before my thoughts begin to start, you know, sounding a little long-winded, highlighting the pros and cons of the game that I'm talking about and such. Usually, these reviews can run to about 10 to 12 paragraphs, which is roughly about 1,200 words. And I attempt to make it so every game gets an equal amount of talking time. Say for, you know, like the episodic pieces, like for most of Telltale Games' stuff, which runs about 5 to 7 paragraphs. Rarely do I find myself in a situation such as this, where I have played a game that is so terrible that doesn't deserve to be given regular article treatment. A game whose awfulness screams to be taken to the back of the tool shed and shot between the eyes like a rabid old Yeller. Spoiler alert if you've never seen that movie. This atrocity is known as Flat Out 4 Total Insanity, and I got the copy of the game right here in my hands. It lists itself as a racing, demolition derby, and stunt game, and all three of these aspects of Flat Out 4 don't work whatsoever. So this series has been around since the first Xbox era, and it's changed developer hands from its Finnish creators at Bugbear to this French company called Kyloton. And that doesn't nail. So the creators of Flat Out have nothing to do with the franchise now, as they're working on their own new car game called Wreckfest, which actually looks like a fun game. But fun is nowhere to be found in this game here, Flat Out 4 Total Insanity. Instead, it's poor racing mechanics, a dull destruction derby, and stunts that should be awesome, like lunging a driver into a big game of pool or darts, but the controls are such shit that you can barely score a measly few points in this game. And in order to unlock more aspects of Flat Out 4, like tracks and cars, you have to beat each level to move on to the next, which is fucking impossible to do with the way this game works. I know I'm supposed to be writing a review for just about everything I get, but in my line of work, it's hard to muster up a professional opinion when something you receive works like shit. And that's what Flat Out 4 Total Insanity is. A big heap of shit. Plus, it brags about having, what, up to 8 players online in play stunt mode locally with friends. I don't know a single friend of mine who'd want to play this game, and when I checked last time, the servers were a complete ghost town. Nobody was playing this game online, meaning players knew ahead of time what they were expecting from it. Flat Out 4 is not worth my intellect to write a piece on, and I don't want to force you listeners and readers to read something that I know I won't be giving my all on. So please, do yourselves a favor, steer clear of Flat Out 4 Total Insanity, a game that feels like it should have been released back on the PlayStation 2 due to its shoddy graphics, crappy controls, and awful choice in new metal soundtrack. Do not fucking bother. You may think I'm over-exaggerating about this, but tell you what, I will suffer for you one more time regarding this game. Sometime later this week, depending on my regular-ass work schedule, don't ask me where I actually work, it's kind of pathetic, I will stream Flat Out 4 Total Insanity via Xbox's Mixer. That way, you can just see how terrible Flat Out 4 Total Insanity truly is. I warn you, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty at all. Right, let's return to the playlist with something maybe a bit more calming. Here's a brand new track from Miwa, who, despite just releasing a new album earlier this year, is still writing music like crazy. From her new EP, Shiny, this is Zettai Ano Basho ni.
Zettai Ano Basho ni.
Oh,
favorite things with Still Practicing from their upcoming album, Fly I Will Because I Can, in stores on July 14th. If you find yourself in the New York City area on July 18th, the Dream Pop Quartet will be performing a record release show at the Mercury Lounge. Tickets on sale now via Ticketfly. The spring 2017 season of anime is just about nearing its end. We've had some winners, we've had some losers, but there's one anime that seems to be on the currents of, is it really good, or is it really bad, or is it really good, but you're kind of waiting for it to be terrible, and that is Aramanga Sensei, and I'm here with Andrew and Jonathan Fleming for Wicked Anime.
Hi. Hi. Remember the losers that he was just talking about?
So the reason why I say that Aramanga Sensei is on the currents of it being a great anime or a terrible anime is because of its creator, Tsukasa Fushimi, who also did Oreimo, or I Can't Believe My Little Sister Is This Cute. And because of this, I didn't really want to give my full opinion on Aramanga Sensei until it was completed. And Andrew, I feel like you're the best person to go into why one would want to wait until a series from this creator was over to give a full opinion of it, because you did a whole video about this aspect.
Yeah, the ending to Oreimo is awful.
How do you really feel?
But it is interesting because Aramanga Sensei is one of the results of what it's like when a studio loves your work so much that they just wanted you to do an original work. So, you know, Oreimo was based off of a light novel, I believe.
Aramanga is also a light novel, too.
It is?
Yeah, it's been published since 2013.
Okay, well, from what I understand is after Oreimo was complete because of its success, A1 just wanted to stick on board with this creator. So they just went ahead and made his next piece of work almost immediately.
Just about, yeah.
And the whole premise of Aramanga Sensei is really interesting because it seems like it's almost kind of biographical in a sense, because it's about a writer. It's a show about writing,
right?
Light novels, and you know, the creator's a light novel creator, and
it's kind of like when the creators of Death Note made Bakuman, which is basically an autobiographical story about them becoming famous manga writers.
Yeah, so it's interesting because you're seeing all these really true points about being a writer in Japan and creating light novels, but in the most anime way possible. And right. Not even in the most anime way possible, in the most Oreimo way possible. And, you know, that kind of route. Because my basic opinion about Aramanga Sensei is it's the best form of anime trash. You know, it is just complete and utter anime trash, but in the best sense possible. Because it's terrible.
Explain that to our listeners, because when I think anime trash that's great, I think automatically of stuff like Monster Musume, but I feel like, is this, like, slipping on a totally different level?
Kinda. It's
yeah, because it doesn't make you a pedophile.
Well, yeah, they didn't really explain that all that much until the very last episode, that all the characters are in middle school.
Yeah.
So you really had no idea how old any of them were. And then halfway through the series, or towards the end of the series, you find out that Muramasa Sensei is in middle school, and you're just like, oh crap, well how old are the rest of these characters? Well, they're all in middle school.
And then that makes you feel terrible, like, what have I been doing with my life?
Well,
at the same time, there's no way a middle schooler would be published like this.
Or have the capability of talking to editors and studio staff professionally.
Right.
Like adults.
Yeah, like they were all the characters talk to all the other adult characters like adults. And that's just not a thing.
No. Like in middle school, you're still getting out of the poop joke phase of your life.
I'm really actually not too sure why they decided to make all the characters in middle school. Like, that makes absolutely no sense to me.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, I know there are anime out there where kids are in middle school, but there aren't anime about professionals that are in middle school.
Yeah, and
they also don't want to openly bone each other.
Yeah, it's really strange. especially with that side character that they introduced, the one who tried to get Sagiri to go to school.
Yes, which was actually the character in Megumi. I almost stopped watching the show because of that episode when she's introduced.
Yeah, so apparently she's in middle school and she's bragging about how she has all these boyfriends and is basically a whore.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, wait a second, hold the phone. Like, how much of this are we willing to believe? You know,
we should be
and,
talking about this at a police station.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and of course she's lying because she wants to be, you know, I don't know if she wants to be creepy or funny, like if that's her way of joking, but...
Well, that's the problem is that it doesn't come across very clear.
Yeah.
No, well, it doesn't. Although I will say probably the way the show ends when they ask her to make a drawing of something and it's like, are you sure? Is your boyfriend a toddler or something? And she goes, no, he's in college. I'm like... What college kid dates a middle schooler? And then automatically you think of Usagi and Mamoru from Sailor Moon.
It's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
But
this one is brought to a more realistic light in the sense that it's like you could kind of blur the lines between Usagi and Mamoru.
Well, especially but. Because characters in Ero Manga Sensei, or the other characters in Ero Manga Sensei in comparison to Megumi, they didn't know that she was kidding. And I think she was trying to make it sound like she wasn't kidding. Mm-hmm. Like, she was being serious, but totally lying. And all the other characters thought she was telling the truth.
Right.
And
right.
Who in their right mind would think that she was telling the truth?
Middle schoolers.
Yeah. But, and there's no way that Sagiri is a better artist than I am. There's no way. Like, I've been doing art for over 10 years, and I'm still not that good. And I practice every day. There's no way that she's not even 10 years old. Like, she can't even have 10 years of experience, and just people don't have that kind of an understanding of human anatomy and color. And
I've always had this idea for like a visual joke in an anime where someone or like an American asks a Japanese person to draw for them because they assume they're so great, and then like the Japanese person is like saying, I suck, I'm terrible, here, look at this, and they just scribble something quickly and it's like the most immaculate thing you've ever seen on the planet.
Like, I imagine that it would be very well rendered.
Yeah I mean, of course, I'm not saying that, you know, Sagiri couldn't be a better artist, but you know,
at her age probably not.
No.
And
they don't even say her. What is she, like 11 or 12?
They don't say. I think they kept it ambiguous for reasons of porn.
Yeah.
Seriously, like, so that they kept her age completely ambiguous. They didn't age her so that people could make doujins. Yeah. And
could be legal.
Well, because the age of consent in Japan is so much lower than it is here in the United States.
Right, it's a 13 in Japan.
It's 13? 13? I thought it was 14.
I thought it was 15.
14 for marriage, 13 for consent.
Hold the phone. Jeez, that's really low.
Yeah, so I think that's where that whole thing is coming from.
18-year-olds can barely make their own right decisions.
But
yeah,
I must say... You know, yeah, 18-year-olds can't make smart decisions anyway, so never mind.
I know 30-year-olds who can't make smart decisions.
Yes, it's true. But I will say that having Sagiri being such a good artist led to one of the best backstory characters to have us of age males see a character who could automatically be best girl of the show, which was Sagiri's mom, who is hilariously lewd the way that Sagiri is, but is, yes, an older woman who likes to also draw lewd art, which was really funny to me. I saw that.
Very,
I was like, that
art, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, that is hilarious. Like, that is really funny and clever, and I enjoyed that aspect of that flashback.
I think the only complaint I had with this flashback is the way A1 Pictures decided to try to make younger, much younger Sagiri look. I don't even want to say the word.
Hot?
Yeah.
Oh, like sexualizing a girl.
A kid.
A little,
yeah,
girl.
Yeah, that was bad, in my honest opinion.
See, and that's kind of what I'm saying about it's anime trash at its finest, because this seriously is probably one of the trashiest animes that I've seen in a very long time that I outwardly enjoyed. Like, I was just like, I will watch this episode every single day, every week it comes out on the week, on the day, yeah. because I love this show so much. But it is just awful.
Yeah, right. I feel like that they had to meet a requirement to put at least one extremely uncomfortable scene. Because if you think about it, who the heck is this show for? I would imagine that the show would be put on really late at night, and middle schoolers wouldn't watch it.
Unless they DVR it.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that if it was my kid watching, I wouldn't want them watching this show.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
It's aimed at adults.
Yeah, it's aimed at adults, but like, is it really, though?
Because the characters are middle schoolers. Like, yeah, because all the characters are in middle school, and they're trying to sexualize them.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a weird version of how South Park is over here in America, where it's like 8-year-olds are talking trash and sexualizing everything.
Right.
But I feel like the difference between South Park and Eromanga Sensei is the animation. Like, South Park is straight up a cartoon, but Eromanga Sensei is just drawn so humanly.
Yes, like, South Park is basically the whole existence of South Park is a joke, where the whole existence of Eromanga Sensei is not. Like, there's actually a point in the show where it's just like, this show is supposed to be titillating.
Right.
And
as opposed to My Little Sister Can't Be This Cute, which the whole point of the joke of the entire show was, oh, do they really like each other?
Yeah, incest, like, anime, ha ha.
That was the joke. Like, it was saying, like, oh, what did you just say? That means you want to mac with your sister, you know? And then they're like, well, no, what are you talking about? And then it turned out to be true and ruined the entire joke of the entire series.
Yeah, because
exactly.
They took them seriously. Especially because there were, like, better girls that he could have chosen the harem.
Yes,
right,
I know.
But this one is straight out just saying, like, anybody has a potential to be boned here. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Masamune kind of, like, confesses his love for Sagiri, but then he goes, no, that's totally wrong. It's wrong on all so many levels. Let's just be brother and sister, or half-brother and half-sister.
They got to a point in the show where everybody, every single character was on the mutual understanding that they like Masamune-kun. Right?
Yeah. Well, Masamune, let's not get people confused with the really bad show from last winter.
Yeah. So they, all the characters like him, and all the characters who like him know all the other characters like him.
Yeah.
Right? So you have this harem where they're all competing for his love, but they all hang out in the same place together all the time.
Kind of like Kiss Him, Not Me in some cases.
Yeah, kinda.
But I felt like Kiss Him, Not Me played it all more for laughs, whereas this show is trying to push the romantic aspect out.
Yeah, this one was definitely on a different level.
And it's really funny because we're just talking about all the stuff that's wrong with the show, but I really like it.
Yeah.
And I watched it every week. Especially because, you know, you had that aspect of Ori Emo, where they were actually blood-related brother and sister, and now you have Eromanga Sensei, where they were step-brother and step-sister, so they have absolutely no relation to each other, and both of their parents are dead. So technically, now they're just roommates, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Are both their parents dead?
The mother on Masamune's side passed away, and then the father on Sagiri's side passed away, but they don't explain what happened to the two surviving parents.
Right, but we do understand that both of them are really sad about something, and it never explains it, because they want us to just...
reason why Sagiri won't leave her room?
Yeah, the reason why she won't leave her room, and... like, the reason, like, Masamune has sad fits every time he kind of thinks about things, because they want you to focus on sexy middle schoolers. Like, they don't want you to have a sad boner.
I wonder if they're going to have to do another season, because there are those questions that still need to be answered.
I hope there's another season.
Yeah, I certainly hope there's a second
season. I do, too.
Because episode 12 was, like, not even any sort of conclusion whatsoever. It was just making me feel really dirty.
See,
But it was a funny kind of dirty, in my opinion. Like, this was like the dick humor that I'm okay with, not the dick humor that you saw in episode two.
Yeah, see,
I just don't know how I feel about bikini-clad middle schoolers playing Twister.
Yeah.
Probably a lot better than elementary school students playing Twister in Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid.
Well, that's true, I guess.
That was a little creepy. And again, I feel like Ori Emo had a story that it was going for. Like, Ori Emo was aiming for a conclusion. And so the story needed a conclusion. Arrow Manga Sensei had no conclusion in sight.
Yeah,
like, there's no goal that any of the characters are trying to reach at the end of it.
As opposed to whoever picks Masamune.
Yeah, so exactly.
Or it could end with this new light novel series that they're making being turned into the anime. Boom, the dream is made, and that's how the show ends.
Yeah. well, and see, that's the thing, is episode 11 kind of did have a conclusion, and then episode 12 was just kind of like, haha. But if they, if they do what they did for Ori Emo had 12 episodes and then 4 OVAs.
Yeah, but now the question is, how will we see those OVAs? Because I don't think we got those Ori Emo OVAs in America.
Yeah, we did. Oh, I got them.
Oh, okay.
I stole them. It was the only way you could get them.
In season 2. Like in the season 2 DVD box
set. Yeah, in the DVD, sure, in the DVD box set, they're not OVAs, they're just episodes.
Right. But they're longer episodes.
Yeah, so it's I'm holding my Ori Emo season 1 box set right in my hand because I do have it. It says 3 DVD box set includes all 12 TV episodes and 4 never before seen TV bonus episodes on 3 DVDs. So they assumed that, or they knew that, yes, we did not get to see those OVA episodes at the end of season 1 and the OVA episodes at the end of season 2. So on the back of the box, they said never before seen. Ta-da! So they do release it with the box set. So we don't know, but getting them elsewhere is up to you.
So what you're saying is that in order to be extremely disappointed, you have to buy the box set. Otherwise, if you watch it online,
and well, no, if you really want to be disappointed, you have to buy it directly from Aniplex.
Right,
that's the real disappointment about it all.
How much did that box set cost you, Andrew?
Well, I bought it. It's so
the black market.
The Ori Emo box set only comes in limited edition. You cannot buy it just on DVD. So it automatically costs you over $100 just to get 13 episodes of Ori Emo. So in order to get it at normal price, I had to wait an entire year during their Christmas sale to get it 50% off.
You see, that's a little bit more reasonable.
Yeah, but you know that if they're selling something for 50% off as a sale, then you know they're stealing.
Yeah,
you know they know they're stealing.
Yeah, so yeah. Good on you, Flex. But yeah, so... and season 2, Ori Emo season 2 was the same way when they released the box set, so I got it cheap by waiting for the sales to come out, because nobody bought it, because it was too expensive. Aniplex.
And people hated the ending.
I guess, but, so Arrow Manga Sensei still has... Arrow Manga Sensei still has yet to, you know, be seen of, are we going to get OVA episodes of Arrow Manga Sensei, or is this the end of it? I hope we get a season 2, at least, so that maybe they can continue the harem aspect, maybe they can tell us what happened to the parents, something. But I kind of feel like, even if they ended it at episode 12, / they really ended it at episode 11,
yeah,
then it's okay. Because it really doesn't need anymore.
Which is weird, because A1 Pictures kind of did the same thing with Interviews and Monster Girls. The second to last episode of Interviews and Monster Girls felt more like a season finale than the 12th episode did.
Right.
That's been kind of a trend recently,
I think it's just to get the audience's hopes up that there's going to be more. Because when you have a conclusion episode, you say, oh, okay, this is where it ends. But if they give you another episode that's like, these are the continuing adventures, you can automatically assume, oh, there's going to be continuing adventures. I'm going to sit and wait.
Oh,
and
man.
I'm going to buy the DVD set so that I can show them that there's going to be, that I want more.
Which is why I'm happy that Funimation has licensed Interviews and Monster Girls, not Aniplex of America.
Oh, good. That's awesome. So Psychono Season 2 just ended. And Psychono Season 2 actually had a the end at episode 11. And Psychono's always been weird with that kind of stuff. If you guys want to watch a better harem, watch Psychono. but Arrow Manga Sensei is good. I do think it's cute. It is cute. We can't...
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I'm a designer. I know what you do to make things cute, and yes, it's cute. So there is that. Does it have to be sexy?
No.
A little bit of a different. That's a little bit of a different story.
Please stop this. Please stop.
That's about it.
Okay.
That's how I feel about Aramanga Sensei.
Yeah, I liked Aramanga Sensei. It was enjoyable. I'm not gonna buy it. It doesn't deserve to be in my collection. It was fun for the most part.
I'll buy it.
I enjoyed it. It had its good moments. It had its creepy ass moments.
I guess that was another thing too. Is I really felt more strongly. I liked it more as it went on. Like I wasn't too into it when it first started. You know, because there really wasn't that much going on in the show, and by episode 2 and episode 3, I was just like, I have no idea where they're going with this show, and then it kind of picked up after that, and then I loved it.
Yeah, that was kind of like where I started, like probably at episode 4.
Yeah,
because I hated Megumi, and I still do. I didn't like the character of Elf Yamada, but then at around episode 4 was like, oh, I'm starting to like this character. She is actually getting to be better. And then it got to a point where Elf Yamada was my best girl of Aramanga Sensei.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because she actually had a natural friendship development written. Like, there wasn't just a point of like, boom, we're friends now. Like you do in most TV shows, there was actually a development of friendship.
Right. They went from like bitter rivals to fair weather friends to legit friends to possible love interests.
Yeah, exactly. And that was kind of well written, dare I say, for Aramanga Sensei.
Don't forget that it started with her playing the piano naked, though.
Yeah, no.
Which kind of made me think of, I don't know if you have ever watched Monty Python's Flying Circus, but the actor Terry Jones has the naked organist.
Yeah, we, just so you know, we have all of Monty Python's Flying Circus on DVD.
Me
so,
too. Yeah. And I have all the movies.
So that came on, onto that episode where she was playing the piano naked, and you're just like, why did she do that? Like, especially when all the windows were open, it's just like, why would you do that?
Well, my thinking was it's the equivalent of her thinking in the shower.
Yeah.
Even though it's totally anime and fan service.
Yeah, because she doesn't like to work, so she wouldn't do that. You know?
It's well, that was her excuse for it. She said it opens up her mind and it helps her think of things to write, but she doesn't like doing that in the first place, so she wouldn't be doing that to get her mind in the right place anyways.
Yeah, I remember writing stories when I was 18 years old, too. That was always a good excuse.
You never played the piano naked when we were living in Florida together.
No, but I... But when I was 18 years old and I started writing stories, I was definitely like, there's a reason why this girl is naked right now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it wasn't legit. You know, it was just like, I really just wanted to make that girl naked.
Yep.
And you know, as much as I tried to write a reason why she was nude, I was like, I guess not.
She doesn't have to be.
Yeah, she really doesn't have to be.
Put the clothes back on. It's all good.
Yep. So from personal experience, I think that that scene is just kind of a writer that hasn't grown up yet.
Maybe it's a middle schooler who wrote it.
Maybe
a middle schooler is writing anime and therefore gives legitimacy to the entire series.
That this would be totally acceptable to me. If this series was written by a middle schooler, I would be like, yes, okay, everything makes sense now, and this is probably one of the most brilliant series I've ever seen made.
It's X-Cop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then it comes down to the thing of like, well, all these middle school characters are writing dirty light novels, and it's weird.
Yeah.
And
which is probably no different from middle schoolers or high schoolers writing all their fan fiction and posting that online.
Well, see, it's funny because we have our own culture here in the United States, and the culture in the United States is adults write romance novels and they like to read romance novels and they suck.
I know.
But I mean, I actually haven't read any romance novels, but I just assume they suck. I assume they're poorly written.
When you see the covers in, you go into Barnes & Noble and you see the covers of
The Wall of Fabio
wearing a cowboy hat. Yeah. So you have the romance novels here in the United States. They're all written by adults. Sure, fine. But light novels in Japan are like huge now. They've exploded, bigger than manga. Light novels are the huge thing in Japan as far as otakus go.
And it wasn't until a few years ago when we started to finally get light novels published here in America.
Right, and the ones that we're getting are things like, you know, Sword Art Online. The first one was really Spice and Wolf. Like, Spice and Wolf came out, and they were like, oh my gosh, I guess they make anime manga, or anime...
Actually, I think it was Haruhi Suzumiya.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Getting more to the point, light novels are written with the idea in mind that we're supposed to be thinking about it in terms of anime and not in terms of these are real people. Like, so you're supposed to think about these words you're reading as anime characters.
Didn't they talk about this in Girlish Number?
I don't remember, actually.
Like, they were basically saying that the light novels are just anime scripts.
Yeah, well, yeah, because in Girlish Number, they were making a light novel into an anime. So that's true.
Right, think about it. Like, the light novel is the script. The manga adaptation of the light novel is the storyboard.
Yeah, so everything that they wrote in Ero Manga Sensei, everybody was a dirty story. Like, they would all write dirty stories. Like, and so they were basically aiming all their stories at younger audiences. So I don't know how true this is in Japan, but I'm wondering, is it true that the light novel scene in Japan isn't all just Sword Art Online and Outbreak Company and ReZero and all those? Like,
and I turn into a hot springs.
I was thinking of the same thing. that light novel where the boy gets resurrected in fantasy world is a hot spring, a woman's hot spring.
That's true, actually.
And I just imagine him always talking, oh my god, look at all these all over the place.
So is Ero Manga Sensei a true representation of that, where everybody's writing dirty novels for teens, which is weird to think about, you know, but yeah. We're like not talking about the show anymore. We're talking about the logistics of the show, which is like way deeper than I thought we were going to get into the Ero Manga.
Yeah, I think that might be probably a subject that's better for Wicked Anime.
So Ero Manga Sensei.
Yes, so Ero Manga Sensei.
Anime trash at its finest.
Yeah, enjoyable. Will not buy it. Might recommend it to a friend or two that has watched tons of anime beforehand. Not for someone that's just starting to watch anime.
Not on the anime news.
Somebody who definitely likes filth. If you like filth, you'll like it.
Like, if you like filth, you'll enjoy this.
Filthy perverts.
And Sugiri definitely got progressively cuter as the thing went on.
As
the show went
on. Cold-hearted little girl.
Andrew Jonathan, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders No Race. And I know you've got an episode coming up in the next couple days, so tell our listeners what we can expect from that episode.
Yeah, we bring on one of our fans, Wicked Fan Gerardo, and it's because he went to E3. Yep. So we talk about E3 for a while and all the cool stuff that came out there. And then we also talk about, as our Tamagotchi, what was it? What was our Tamagotchi?
Something.
We talked about something. Evan, you remember?
Oh, shows that we try to avoid, but just can't seem to avoid.
That's right. Yeah, shows that were like, I shouldn't be watching this. And as a matter of fact, I believe one of my answers was Ero Manga Sensei.
Yeah, it was.
Because it's a show that makes you say, I shouldn't be watching this, but I'm totally going to finish the series, aren't I? Ero Manga Sensei, perfect example of it right there. So, you got a preview of exactly what we talk about on our next episode of Wicked Anime.
A nice 30-minute preview of that.
Yeah.
And be sure to check out Wicked Anime at nerdyshirt.com/Wicked Anime. Where else can people find you?
You can also find us at youtube.com/Wicked Anime Reviews. You can tweet us at YoWickedAnime. We're on Tumblr sometimes. At wickedanime.tumblr.com, and then you can find us on Twitch TV at Wicked Anna Play. Don't forget that if you want to don't forget that if you want to rate and review us, you can find us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review and a review, and we will read those on the show. And also you can find us on Podchasers, which you can actually even find No Borders No Race and the Boston Bachelor Brigade on Podchasers as well. And you give any community a 5-star rating there.
Yes,
and
Podchasers is brand new.
Yeah, you can get beta keys for them if you use beta keys Nerdy Show, all lowercase, all one word, or just Nerdy. If either one of those don't work, try the other one. You can get beta access to it and start building the community there. And then you can also find us at soundcloud.com/wickedanime. Be sure to subscribe to all these for us because we would love it.
Nice. So to end this segment, I figure it would be appropriate that we play the ending theme to Eremanga Sensei, which is very ska-like.
The only thing that the creator and I agree on is ska music.
Yeah, because they did the same thing for Oreimo. All the music was ska.
Yep.
And Eremanga Sensei had some pretty fantastic opening and closing.
They did.
I watched both of them every time.
Yep.
But I think we're in agreement where the ending is the best out of the two.
I don't know. I kind of like the opening.
I like the opening, but you can tell that the horn section is Pro Tools.
Yeah.
For sure.
Whereas this song, which is by Trisail, who also did the theme song for the A1 Picture Show Interviews of Monster Girls.
Yep.
It's all horns. It's all natural horns. It's no, like, electronica stuff. They actually got a good band in there.
But Trisail is not a ska band.
No, they're an idol group. But a good one. They're a very good one.
Yep.
So anyway, here are Trisail with the song Adrenaline, with 3 exclamation points at the end.
Don't let me go.
year's Now or Never EP, that was Aeronauts with Ghost. They'll be playing a few gigs around Japan this summer, so visit aeronauts.org for more information. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at KingBabyDuckESH, on the J-pop, anime, and video games amino pages at KingBabyDuckESH, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/omnistryinc. Like us on Facebook.com/Boston Bash Brigade and on Facebook.com/Land of Esh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smashed Rook, and Nerd Crave. Promotional consideration for this week's tracks from My Favorite Things and Tombstones in Their Eyes, made by Shameless Promotion PR. Thanks again for sending down these kick-ass artists for us to spin. And a special thanks also to our buddies Andrew and Jonathan Fleming from Wicked Anime. Thank you again for guesting on this week's show. Looking forward to recording the next episode. Today, I'm in the mood to end on a fantastic song. And this song comes from Floggin' Molly, who just released a brand new album called Life is Good. And I urge everybody out there to grab it. It's probably my contender so far for Album of the Year. It's angry, it's fast, it's solemn, it's filled with heart, it's their best album in years. This song is called The Hand of John L. Sullivan. And until next time, this is your King Baby Doc, reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps.
It may be tough, but you'll never knock him down. He is a towering god, but not a sacred cow. Be caught, but never on the ropes. He is the diamond rough in every poor man's hope. Oh, he's always there to meet you. He's the champion of the people, the first and last name ever to be spoken. Now I'm the man with the plan. Shake the hand of John O'Sullivan. Fight until the end, the legend you will be. And if any man should ask, if any man could carry, I'm the man with the plan. He is a towering god, but not a sacred cow.
always glad to meet you. He's the champion of the people, the first and last and ever to be spoken. Now I'm the man with the plan. Shake the hand of John O'Sullivan. Fight until the end, legend he will be. And if any man should ask, if any man could carry, I'm the man with the plan. Shake the hand of John O'Sullivan. Cause I'm the man with the plan. Shake the hand of John O'Sullivan. Fight until the end, legend he will be. And if any man should ask, now I'm the man with the plan. Shake the hand of John O'Sullivan.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.